I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my Rethinking Learning podcast, where I have conversations with inspirational educators, thought leaders, and change agents. Hi, everyone. Today, I have someone really special here. I've been wanting to talk to Evan Robb for so long. Thank you, Evan, for joining me.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara. It is an absolute pleasure for me to spend some time with you this afternoon. Thank you.
It's still morning here in California, so I'm lucky. So before we start, I just have to show you off a little bit and tell everyone about you. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Thank you.
So Evan is a principal of Johnson Williams Middle School in Berryville, Virginia. And he's recipient of the Horace Mann Educator of the Year Award, serves on the NCTE National Commission for Reading. That's not all. Wait till you hear all of this. He's also author of Principals Leadership Sourcebook, which we're going to talk about. And he has a new book coming out this spring on the 10-Minute Principle and more, but I'll tell you about that later when we talk. He has his own podcast, The Robb Review. He has a blog and all of that, but he also shares his conversations on the Disrupt Ed TV. Am I saying that right? Disrupt Ed?
Absolutely, at Disrupt Ed TV.
And those are coming out weekly right now. So we'll have to listen to both of those too. And Evan, I didn't even know this. I didn't know you were named the top 25 educational leaders to follow. I follow you, so I want to make sure everyone else does too. So your Twitter handle is E-R-O-B-B Principal. Is that right?
At E-Robb Principal, absolutely.
E-Robb Principal, but there's two Bs. I want to make sure they know that.
Thank you.
So thank you for being here. I always love to find out about people, you know, that are in such leadership roles and doing so much, and realize there's so much about you that brought you to this place. So I'd love to have you share a little bit about you first.
I appreciate that. You're right. Whenever anyone finds any success, however they may define that in their life, it's often the byproduct of a lot of really great people behind them to help them get to that place. I did not start on a path wanting to be an educator. In fact, I think I tried to avoid that a lot when I was younger, since both of my parents were educators. But through fate and interesting interventions and some happenstance along the way, I ended up choosing a path in education and have certainly been thrilled about that choice for many, many years. In my 28th year now as an educator, and certainly hope to be able to do many more. One of the reasons that I think I ultimately decided on a pathway in education was my mother, who remains a career educator and who has been a consistent source of inspiration for me in terms of my leadership and in terms of my commitment to children, teaching, and learning.
In fact, her name is Laura Robb.
Yes.
Right? And the two of you actually do the podcast together, right?
We do. You know, Laura is much more prolific of a writer than I am. She's written over 30 books and does a lot more speaking than I do. But I am fortunate that my mother lives around the corner from me. So it is not hard for me to do podcasts. You know, this is a little more complicated that we're doing today, trying to make this work through our computers. But I can have my mother come over to our house and come down to the basement, and we can make a podcast on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. And we love doing that. We like to just share our thoughts and opinions about education. We keep it really positive, try to keep it motivating. And I have an opportunity to share some interesting stories from my past when I was a student in school, which were not always positive, but ultimately helped shape the person that I am today.
Okay. I'm not going to let you go without sharing one, okay? Because, I mean, most of the people I talk to tell me that they didn't always have the best experiences in school, and that's why they wanted to go into education. What about you?
I would say that there is tremendous truth in that. It was an interesting ride for me as I went through school. So I'll give you a couple really quick ones. One of the ones that I've joked about in our podcast before, and it's actually true, and it's nothing to be proud of, is when I was in middle school, through grade 6, 7, and 8, I never read a book. I didn't have to. It was a very traditional school, and our teachers would read out loud to us. And that was my experience with language arts. And I wasn't required to do independent reading. And it is a little comical as I look back on it now, but it is absolutely not something that I recommend to anyone for them to follow. The other thing that I'll share is I was a champion of extra credit when I was in middle school and would be known many times to take some tissues or take some paper towels from our house and bring them into class to earn some extra points because it was sometimes the only way that I could get a good grade in a class. Now, my mother would always wonder why she kept having to buy more paper towels and tissues. And as I got older, I confessed to her during that time I would bring them into school frequently. I am not a big fan of extra credit. I'm certainly well-versed on the research on why it is not a great thing to have in schools. But it was very much part of my past when I was a youngster in middle school.
Okay, so you brought paper towels to school because the teacher didn't have enough and then you got extra credit?
I would, paper towels became my math grade.
Oh my goodness, that's terrible.
you asked for a couple examples and I'll give you a couple good ones there. And they are true. And again, I don't recommend that. And I do know that bringing in tissues is a really nice thing to do, and I like kids to do that, but it should not represent their algebra grade.
No. Well, that's a new one for me. I like it. I'm glad you shared it. I'm sure you have a lot more, so I'm going to have to listen to your podcast more. So how did you get to the point where, you know, and how long have you been a principal at your school?
I have been a principal since 1999.
Wow.
And yeah, and I've been at the school that I am right now since 2004, which is unusual. You know, I don't know the exact stats, but I believe that the time that people stay in the principal position is rather short and certainly not 15 plus years nowadays when you look in general across the country. The school that I am a principal in right now is actually the school that I began my teaching career in. So I started teaching here, went away to become a principal in a neighboring district, and then came back to the building where I began my teaching career, and I've been here ever since. And what I can say is that I've certainly learned some interesting lessons throughout my life, and I would guess you've probably learned these too, is that I am very into the concept of finding my happiness where I am. You know, I don't live my life thinking that the grass is greener somewhere else. I want to find my happiness right here. And day in and day out, there is no job that I have ever loved more than being a school principal. I have fabulous kids, wonderful staff, and great community. And I always love coming to work.
Well, I love middle school. I was a middle school teacher.
Okay.
So you have to know that. I also have to tell you, I grew up in Maryland, not too far from you. I'm not sure where Berryville is.
Berryville is, I'm just trying to give you a marker, we're about 40 minutes from Dulles Airport.
Okay. All right. So I was in Bethesda, not too far from you.
No, not too far at all.
Yeah. So have you always lived there?
Yeah. I was born in a neighboring town called Winchester, Virginia, which I was born there and went to school there when I was a youngster and have been able to work in the general area. So I'm lucky, you know, that my wife and I have a house right around the block from where my mother lives and where she lived, of course, with my father when he was still alive, and been able to stay local and enjoy a career right where I was born.
I miss it. I went to Walter Johnson High School. Do you know that school?
I've heard of that school.
Yeah, I went there. And then we moved out here right after high school in to California. And I went to one coast to the other and they're mm-hmm. completely different. But it's really interesting. It's a beautiful area and I've done a lot of, you know, I try to go back, see what's going on. It's changed a lot.
it is, you know, at least whenever I talk to friends of mine that are living on the West Coast, one advantage about where I live is that buying a house is still affordable. And, there are certainly areas, you know, on the western part of the United States where real estate's a lot more expensive than it is over here.
Oh yeah. And we won't go into that, but I could never buy my own house now. Okay, so let's talk about you as a leader and the leader's
Absolutely.
Role in modeling. You wrote your book, Principled Leadership's source book, and there's a whole thing that you mentioned is intentional leadership. What do you mean by that?
Intentional leadership means that it is important to come in every day and to have an understanding, a philosophical base for the decisions that you make as you move through your job. If that doesn't occur, then at times an administrator can be feeling like they're just simply reacting to things that are going on around them. So I have found that having a good understanding of who I am as a person, what I believe in, and what I want to make a priority helps bring some intentionality to what I do. So I'll give you an example. If I am intentional about wanting our staff to bring, I want more creativity in our building. I want people to feel that they can be innovative. I want people to feel that they can be safe. You know, I need to communicate that, and my actions need to be in such a way that support that in my building. And I try to bring that intentionality into the building and hope that that also transfers into the classroom in a positive way. I think that intentionality is also important because take a core belief and say, as an educator, I hope every educator believes in the capacity of children, and I hope educators believe that the decisions that they make should be in the best interests of children. You know, and that's a broad way to kind of center one's intentionality and say, okay, the decisions that I make need to be aligned with those philosophical sort of core beliefs to make sure that I am making decisions that are truly in the best interest of children in the building. And sometimes, you know, there can be some challenges within a school where one can feel that a decision may be better for staff, but it may not necessarily be in the best interest of children. And those are part of the daily tests of building level leadership to make sure that decisions are in line with one's philosophy. And of course, that decisions are intentional.
Well, you know, I'm kind of in tune with you because I'm whole thing on positivity. There's a whole movement on kindness. And
absolutely.
And we're finding that with this idea of building agency, it's so important. But all of us are learners, but we forget. We forget because we weren't taught as teachers, right, to focus on the learners first. We were taught to change how we teach, what we do, work on the curriculum, teach everything that, you know, to the standards, all of those things. And so now trying to change people is different. You know, it's difficult right now.
Well, it is. And we're going through a tremendous shift in education now, the biggest shift that I've seen within my career. And a lot of it has to do with an area that I know that you have expertise in, which is personalized learning and personalization of learning. You know, I grew up in schools, and I'm sure many people that are listening to this had school experiences where they were passive recipients of information in classes that typically at high school that were very lecture-based, where you had to be very auditory in order to be able to pick up the information. And that is diametrically different than creating personalized learning experiences for students. And you're absolutely right that I'm not, and I certainly don't negate the value of the curriculum, but I would say that powering through the curriculum when you have no evidence that kids are learning or understanding the curriculum doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So I think that that shift in thinking, which really is a shift in mindset, is the biggest shift that I see happening, you know, I've seen happening over the last decade in education, and I'm very hopeful about the changes that I see, you know, going forward in education.
So before we talk about mindset, you had said something in one of your blog posts or podcasts that I listened to about the idea of positivity, but communicating your why. Now, that's big for me. You know that.
I do. And certainly big for me. You know, as I was saying, when you were asking me about my job and how excited I am to come into work every day, all of that has to do with personal choices that I'm in complete control of as an individual. You know, I can make choices to be positive and I can make choices to not. And I can make choices to influence people in a positive way or to not. And what I have found is that people that allow positivity to be part of their life tend to draw to them people that are like-minded. And I also find the opposite, that people who are negative tend to draw that kind of person to them. So that comes down to a choice, and that choice is embedded in, you know, what you believe in, your personal why, what your motivation is as a human being. And I spend a lot of time thinking about that and a lot of time communicating that. I know you're familiar with the work of Simon Sinek, and I'm sure you've seen his TED Talk on the Golden Circle, which talks about, you know, what you do, how you do, and why. And it's a very interesting premise that he makes, which is that the most successful businesses, and in the case of our conversation, schools, are always going to be focusing on their why. They're not going to focus as much on their what and their how. The why is what's going to draw people to an organization or to a school. So, you know, why do people love to buy Apple computers? Or what people want an iPhone? What makes people have that attachment to a company like Apple? And it's because they buy into the why, what Apple is all about. And so I'm very interested in how you kind of bring that thinking into a school. And so in essence, and that's a new change also, because that has to do not only with the leader's role in communicating what they believe in, helping staff understand that, making sure that you're bringing people into the building that are in alignment with that, but also how does the school communicate to parents and the community at large what they're about, so people want to send their children to the school. Because, you know, people have choices when they move. You know, my hope is that when people want to live in the general area where I'm a school administrator, that they'll look at real estate and they'll look at the community, and through social media and different mechanisms, they'll have an understanding of what I'm about and what our school is about, and they will want to have their children be in our school.
You know, it's fun watching you talk. People don't know that. I know that we're doing a podcast, but I can see you, and you got really excited talking about this. This is how I am about the why. And I know Simon Sinek, I use his work, I use some other work about the why, but getting people to understand that a school needs this brand, needs to be able to share why they're so passionate about what they do, so other people feel that way also. And that's why teachers need that also. It seems like you probably have a staff that's like that, because you're like that.
I do. I'm very blessed. I have a fabulous staff, and I've had the unique opportunity to hire, I think, prior to probably 95% of my staff. So I am able to make sure that people that I bring into my school are aligned with the school's vision and aligned to what I believe in terms of what's best for kids. And that makes a very, very powerful difference in the building. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Wonderful. This is so exciting to hear this. This idea of a growth mindset to me is so important around trying to encourage this why, because we have some people that just feel like can't do it. They just don't get it, that they could do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The mindset that people choose has a significant impact not only on, you know, the learning that occurs within a classroom, but also on how people develop and grow as professionals and also as human beings. I think that fixed mindset is one of the worst things that plagues education and probably many other industries. And to kind of encapsulate very simple, it is in its simplest terms, a belief that you either can do something or you can't. You know, people, you either have an innate talent to do something or you simply cannot. And I'll give you an example, and this is how it typically manifests within a school. So you'll have sometimes children who struggle in mathematics, and they have a hard time in math. And a teacher or an administrator will reach out to a parent and want to have a conversation about their child's challenges with learning mathematics. And the response that they'll hear is, well, I understand why my son or daughter is bad at math, because I was bad at math. And in fact, you know, my grandparents were bad at math. And in fact, everyone in my family is just generationally bad in mathematics. And that kind of thinking and that kind of communication, in this case, sometimes within a family to a child, can make them believe that they simply will not be able to be good at math. Now, a growth mindset is a belief that with time, opportunity, and effort, the proper supports, the proper interventions, that you can, in this case, be good at math, or you can be good at anything if you have enough support and if you have enough encouragement and opportunities to learn along the way. So that has a profound impact on how a teacher may view students, how a principal may view teachers, and the entire culture within a building. what I would say is, you know, there are a lot of things, and it would be a long conversation about what are the things that I would really love for every classroom in America to have in terms of the qualities within the teacher. But a couple of things that really come to mind are mindset and also their personal efficacy, because they go hand in hand. Their personal efficacy would be, of course, one's belief in the capacity of the children that they're working with and their belief that they have ability to positively impact learning on the children. And mindset would be one's understanding that kids will need time, opportunity, and effort in order to learn and in order to achieve, versus a fixed mindset where you would be sorting and selecting students into those who can and those who can't. And that is very, very harmful within education. And I would say it becomes very, very unfair for kids that don't have parents who can advocate for them. And no doubt has caused harm for many children over many, many years. And I'm hopeful that that will be changing. What I will say is, you know, you can't have a classroom that's very growth mindset oriented, led by a teacher who's living with a fixed mindset. There has to be congruency. You know, just like you can't have a classroom that's trying to celebrate positivity with a teacher who's inherently negative. It doesn't work that way. And the same parallelism works within a school where if a principal believes in growth mindset and communicates that as part of their why, and therefore is encouraging teachers to take risks with their instruction, to understand that sometimes when you take risks, you might fail, but you can try again and find opportunities to succeed, that sends a very, very powerful message to educators in the building. Now, if the principal is one who is leading by fear-mongering, someone who is not building trust, someone who is making people afraid to take risks, then innovation will not occur in the building, or at best it will occur just in spots and people will kind of hunker down. So what I always try to explain, and I'm hoping I'm doing it well today, is there are definitely some parallels between the way that the principal would work with staff and students and the way that the teacher would be working with children in terms of communicating mindset, communicating expectations, and creating a culture within the classroom or culture within the building that celebrates innovation, creativity, positivity, all the things that we all want as human beings.
Wow. I love everything you just said right there. I want to just package it, because that's what a school needs. It's all about the relationships you make, and they have to be built on trust. And if you're positive, if the focus is on positivity and get rid of that negativity, I just want to bring up, I'm asked to come into schools and observe, and I usually go to the staff room first just to listen. Because if I hear a lot of negative talk, that's the place that we're going to work on. And, you know, they have to build that thing with the child is number one. And when you send your children to the next teacher, the first thing you say is, "What? Don't say, watch out for this kid. Say, this kid is very unique and there's special things that we need to do with them, but be positive. It's all about being positive."
And positivity is always a choice. And you are 100% correct that education is a relationship business. And relationships are things that need to be worked on. They're things that should not be taken for granted. And they are the foundation for trust and bringing creativity within a school and bringing innovation within a school. Because if the relationship isn't there, none of those things can occur. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, there's a truism with kids, but this also works for adults, which is students will never work hard for a teacher if they think the teacher does not like them. They just simply won't. Kids will work super hard if they think the teacher has faith in them, believes in them, and likes them and cares for them. And I would say the exact same parallel exists between a principal and their staff. You know, staff need to know that the principal cares for them and wants them to be successful. But, and this gets back to what you were explaining earlier about the why, they need to know that you care for them and that you support them in alignment with what you believe. Because you don't want people to feel that you're being supportive of them when you're not in alignment, you know, because then you're potentially acquiescing your beliefs, you know, to build relationships, which is not necessarily a good thing. So, you know, the best relationships are founded when you and I or myself and another person have a really clear understanding of why we're doing what we're doing. And that's the foundation for a good relationship. And that can have a tremendous impact within a building. Where I see sometimes people make some hiccups along the road is trying to make connections that compromise what they believe in order to make a connection. And that may make a short-term connection, but that's not the kind of connection that's going to lead to great things happening within a school or an organization.
Oh, I wish I was teaching again and worked for you.
You need to tell me what subject you teach, because we always can have a possibility.
Social studies.
There you
especially
go.
Now. I think we really need kids to understand the world around them. And so, I could talk to you all day. Unfortunately, I try to kind of keep it around under 30 minutes. And I have to say, this is everything you're mentioning is just, I could take each piece and expand on it. So I know you have that new book coming out, the 10 Minute Principle. Is that mm-hmm. right?
The 10 Minute Principle.
What is that about? Is it just two short little things that principles do? Or
It is. You know, what I do in this book is I look at some of the foundational elements that are, I believe, needed for a school to be successful. And I also look at some of the additional elements that are part of a school. So let's take classroom walkthroughs as an example. So within the book, through stories and examples, I share my ideas and then I create opportunities that one can do within approximately 10 minutes of time. So along the lines of a class walkthrough, I might give a 10-minute opportunity on how you might run a debrief after a walkthrough. So the book is designed to look at lots of different aspects of the building and then carve it out into opportunities that can be done in around 10 minutes in order to have impactful change within your building.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to read that one.
Thank you.
I do have to say, you told me, but we didn't talk about it. You and your mom, Laura, Rob, you're writing a book also for Dave Burgess Consulting. It's what is it? Making Star Pudding? Come on, I'm really confused. What does the title mean?
Well, my mother, I credit my mother with her creativity, but I love the title because at the core of this book, you know, are concepts such as dreaming and thinking of things that might not even be possible and trying to make them possible. And our book talks through story about our philosophies of leadership and our tremendous belief in the power of relationships, connections, and in some ways, finding ways to redefine how we communicate and how we connect within schools and from schools through to central offices in order to create impactful change for children.
Oh, both of these. So when is that coming out?
We believe that will be coming out in the summer of 2019.
Oh, that's not.
Yeah.
It's just around the corner.
Time goes quick.
It's just, Evan, this has been just not only delightful, but really educational and also inspiring for me, because what you're saying are all the things I've been believing and talking about. It's just nice to know that you're actually doing this in your school and sharing it on your podcast and in your writing.
Thank you. You know, it's fun when you I always enjoy having a conversation with people that I feel I have some like-mindedness with. You know, one of the things that I'm very lucky in my school division, I think one of the main reasons I stay here, is I have a great superintendent who allows me to do creative things within my building and remove some constraints that might in the past have held some things back. So all those things in place, boy, it can make a really powerful difference within an organization.
Oh, thank you so much. We're going to be putting a blog post together. I'm going to ask you for, you know, some of the links to some of the things that you talked about.
Absolutely.
And maybe even some pictures. And I already found, by the way, I found several videos that you did, including a TED Talk. So I'm going to be putting those in there also.
Okay.
So thank you so much for, this was just very inspiring.
Well, I thank you. The day gets busy when you're a principal, and it is always good to be able to take some time and have those conversations about what you believe in, what you're passionate about, because it gets you centered and it gets you energized and, hopefully helps, me to motivate and inspire others to to find the greatness that's in them, because I think that it is in everyone if you look for it and you can find it.
Oh, I got some quotes from you now, too. That was just wonderful. Thank you so much. And you just inspired me to, I just let you know, I was kind of like not sure how much I wanted to do, and then reached out to you, and it was just enough to get me going again. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the feedback. That makes my day. I appreciate that.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Evan Robb. Look for a complimentary blog post about Evan, where we're going to pull together resources and links all around positivity, leadership, and mindset and more. So please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a review. You can also subscribe to my website at barbarabray.net to receive announcements and updates so you don't miss any of the conversations.